Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, guys? Dave Mate for another online Mate Circle. Welcome to the circle. Today we are talking about drinking yerba mate the traditional way. So how is that going to start? We're going to start with the necessary tools needed to drink mate the traditional way. We're going to start straight from the beginning. Then I'm going to show you how to prepare mate the traditional way, the way that I've learned how to prepare it from my 3 years living in Argentina, Uruguay, and learning directly from the locals and learning from their parents and learning from their grandparents and just totally immersing myself in the culture, the language, the food, the great people. Argentinians are very lovely people. Once you get to know them, they get to know you. They're some of the best people in the world. Thank you, all you Argentines watching this, for helping to initiate me into the world of yerba mate, or yerba mate tea, as I sometimes describe it. I know some of you guys hate when I call it tea, but let's face it, tea has become a general term for infused herbs. There's no way around that. That's just how our language has evolved. So when I refer to yerba mate, even though it is not technically Camellia sinensis, which is only the only tea plant in the world, it's still safe to call it yerba mate tea, just so we avoid confusion. All right, guys, so let's start from the beginning, and let me show you some various yerba mate gourds. Because if you want to drink yerba mate the traditional way, the first thing that you need to do is get yourself at least one good solid gourd. But over time, you want to have at least two or three or four gourds. I know many materos, yerba mate enthusiasts, yerba mate aficionados, known as materos, who have upwards of 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 gourds. It's very normal. It's sort of like a pipe smoker who has four or five different pipes, or somebody who drinks wine has five different sets of wine glasses for different types of wine, different types of occasions, so on and so forth. So let's get into it, guys. Now, when you're drinking yerba mate the traditional way, we always have to go back to one of the original vessels of drinking yerba mate, the calabash gourd. This right here has been used for at least, let's call it, 350 years or so. Okay? Now, their original gourd, depending on what researcher or what scientists are asking, came from earthenware, or basically clay pots. But those evolved into a squash plant right here. People started using squash plants. And, you know, this is basically just a summer squash grown in Argentina or Brazil or Paraguay, in that region, the southern cone part of South America. And believe it or not, as light as this is, as thin as this is one of the best, most reliable yerba mate gourds you could ever use. I kid you not, I've known some people who have had the same exact calabash gourd for 10 years. My mother had a gourd for, I think, about 15 years, calabash gourd. So that just is a testament to how long these things could last. They could last for a long time, as long as you take care of them. Now, when you're drinking yerba mate the traditional way, you need a vessel. You need some. You're going to see a lot of people with a calabash gourd. If you go to Uruguay, you'll see a lot of people with calabash gourds as well, but you'll also see them with leather-wrapped ceramic gourds, which I'll show you in a bit. And if you go to Brazil, southern Brazil, the three southernmost states in Brazil, that's where mate is concentrated. In Brazil, it's not the entire country. You're going to see people with very large calabash gourds. I actually don't have one on me because I don't really use them. It's not that I don't like them. It's just that I prefer gourds that are smaller and more compact. That's just my style. Some people swear by the other ones, and, you know, that's their own prerogative. That's okay. Everyone has their own taste. So the calabash gourd, what you have to do first with the calabash gourd, once you get the gourd, you have to cure the gourd. What does curing the gourd mean? Well, that means essentially you are strengthening the gourd, because these gourds usually come with microscopic cracks or this sort of honeycomb effect where sometimes they could crack or leak. So in order to seal these cracks, we have to, the simple way to do it, there's many ways to do it, but let me just give you a very simple way, okay? You fill this up with yerba mate, any sort of yerba mate. Some people say mate with palos, with twigs. Some people say mate that's gaucho mate that's very strong from Brazil or Uruguay. Doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. Fill it up with any sort of mate you want. Then add hot water to the top, okay? It doesn't have to be boiling water. I recommend that it's not boiling water, just very hot water that has been heated under boiling point. So when you see the little bubbles just starting to pop up, take it off. So you added your mate, you added your water, and then you just let this sit. Let it sit for at least 12 hours. Now, if you have time and you're around to watch it, periodically, what's going to happen is the gourd is going to absorb the water and the mate is going to absorb the water. So every several hours, if you can, it's not absolutely necessary, but if you can, just keep on topping it off with water. So after 12 to 24 hours, let's call it 12 to 24 hours, at least 12 hours, maximum 24 hours, you dump everything out and then you get going. You can start drinking from it right away. Okay? Now your gourd is cured. Now, this is very important. Over the next couple of weeks of you using this calabash gourd, you're going to start to see, the technical term is called oxidation, okay? You're going to start to see not necessarily mold, but you're going to see blotches, little green blotches, little dark blotches. Don't worry about it. A lot of people start worrying. They think they're going to get poisoned. They think they're, you know, drinking something bad. Totally normal. It's akin to cutting an apple in half, setting that apple aside, coming back to it after several hours, and the apple is turned all brown and black and kind of nasty looking. But if you were to eat that apple, you'd be okay. Same thing with this. You're going to have oxidation because this is organic matter inside of here. This is plant matter. It's going to break down. It's going to essentially break down. That's what's happening. But after several weeks of using this gourd and allowing it to dry properly between use, which is very important, whenever you're not using this gourd, you should rinse it out very well, set it on its side, and let it dry until it's bone dry. Then you use it again. Okay? So after several weeks of you using this, you're just going to have one uniform dark green-brown color. And it's going to be bone dry in between uses. And that takes a couple weeks. Okay? During those first couple weeks, the gourd may also produce a bitter taste. Now, basically, that's a result of these compounds called cucurbitachins that are a part of this squash plant. Technically, they're actually very healthy for you. They're saponins. And if you saw my last video, you know that saponins are anti-inflammatory, help reduce stress, internal, external stress, so on and so forth. I won't go into that. But the things that make this gourd bitter are actually very good for you. So yes, you have to deal with the little slight bitter taste that comes from this, but it goes away after a couple weeks of use, and then it won't impart taste anymore. Okay? So let me just keep on going and showing you different sorts of gourds, and then we'll come back, and I'll show you how to prepare mate inside of the gourd of your own choice. Okay? So gourds come in all sizes, shapes, and forms. Different countries have different styles. That's pretty much the style of northern Argentina. From the Misiones region, which is arguably the most important region of yerba mate in the world. In my opinion, you know, some people may argue and say southern Brazil is the most important. But southern Brazil and Argentina kind of go back and forth in terms of the largest producers of mate in the world. Some years Brazil is up, other years Argentina is up. So just a little history on mate. Mate principally grows in three regions: northern Argentina, southern Brazil, Paraguay, and yes, it does grow in Uruguay, but it doesn't grow there on a commercial scale. Why is that? Well, the main reason is that Uruguayans are predominantly concerned with farmland, paper production, pulp production. They have a lot of eucalyptus trees for pulp production. They don't really have the capacity to grow yerba mate. They're trying to change that, and they're trying to develop farmland for it to be grown. They're bringing scientists right now, consultants, so on and so forth. We'll see what happens over the next couple of years. I wouldn't doubt it if Uruguay begins their own commercial production on a small scale, yerba mate. Okay, speaking of Uruguay, let's jump over to Uruguay and show you one of the typical gourds of that country. Okay, Uruguayans love these sort of styles. I bought this gourd in Colonia, Uruguay, which is directly across the river from Buenos Aires. The river is called the Rio Plata. I believe it's the largest river in the world, I think. I may be mistaken, but I think it is. Or the largest basin of water between two countries. But anyway, so this gourd right here, as you can see, is very different. This gourd has a wide opening. It's ceramic inside, very heavy, well, not very heavy, but compared to the other gourds, it has a significant weight. It's very sturdy, and it's wrapped with this beautiful dyed leather. Now, I know the video quality is not great. I'm just shooting this from my MacBook, so it's actually like a nice dark purple. Typical gourd of Uruguay. In fact, they usually have larger gourds. You'll see people on the Rambla. The Rambla is the basically the walkway along the water. If you ever go to Uruguay, check out Colonia, check out Montevideo. Beautiful, beautiful areas of Uruguay. Everybody is drinking yerba mate. Everybody. I think it's something like 95 or 97% of the country drinks yerba mate daily. Per capita, they drink the most yerba mate than anybody else in the world. I think it's something like 16 pounds per capita, which is insane. So this is a typical gourd of Uruguay. Now, they have many styles. They also drink out of the calabash gourd. This one's very, very typical of Uruguay. Okay? Now, let's talk about. I wish I had a traditional. My friend Steven's probably going to hear this, but I wish I had a traditional Brazilian gourd to show you. I just don't like them that much, so I don't have one on me. Let me show you another gourd. Okay. Now, this gourd, I can't say that it's typical of anything because it's the gourd that I created, I designed. It's made out of a wood, as far as I know. No one has ever used this wood to create a yerba mate gourd before. It's made out of lignum vitae, which is the wood predominantly found in the Caribbean. It's the hardest wood in the world, most dense wood in the world. This wood, once it is stabilized, is probably one of the most trustworthy woods you could ever have. It just stays in its form. You don't have to worry about it cracking. But the only thing with this wood is that if it's not properly cured, if it's not properly dried before it's shaped, it will crack. That's exactly what happened with this one. And I don't know if you can see it, but there is a slight crack there. Probably can't see it that well. So this gourd right here, it has sort of a shape like an Argentinian shape, but it's a little different. I kind of designed it however I wanted to design it, and this is how it came out. This is lignum vitae, if you want to know about the wood. Lignum vitae from the Caribbean. Now, we could jump on over to smaller gourds, okay? These aren't that popular with a lot of people. I love them. I love these sort of personal use gourds. This one actually was produced by some artisans that I used to work with in Argentina, in the Cordoba area of Argentina. It's a little tiny gourd, little baby. It just holds probably a quarter ounce, half an ounce at most of dry yerba mate. These are these little one hitters, okay? This is our first release several years ago, 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago when we released these small little guys. But we've since improved them, and let me show you because somebody asked me today for a side-by-side comparison. And this is not a video on products and stuff. I'm not trying to, show products, but I'm just trying to show you different gourds and different sizes. Okay, so this is another gourd right here to my left. As you can see, slightly bigger, holds more. And the point I want to get across with these gourds is just the different types of wood, the different types of materials. That's what I'm trying to show you here. This gourd is made out of Spanish cedar wood. Okay, I love this wood. In my opinion, this is the best wood when it comes to gourds. Why is that? Because this wood can handle water the best. in many ways it handles water the best. Now, what is hygroscopic, okay, which means that it absorbs water and it expels water at any given time. It wood is constantly trying to reach equilibrium of moisture. It's called the moisture content of the wood. So all wood that you see around, whether it's a living tree or a chair or whatever it is, that wood is being subjugated to the environment around it, the humidity levels around it. What I like about Spanish cedar is that this wood can deal with extreme changes in heat, extreme changes in humidity. Now, in Argentina, they don't really use this wood that much. Again, not to toot my own horn or anything, but I developed this gourd in Jamaica, and we sourced this sort of wood because we found that this wood is the most reliable, Spanish cedars. So if you're looking for gourds and you see, you come across somebody who's making them out of Spanish cedar, I highly recommend you give them a shot. Okay? So this is one of those single-use gourds again, but it actually holds a lot of mate, this gourd. It holds about 1.25 ounces of dry yerba mate up until with space, so you don't fill the whole thing up. This gourd isn't really typical of any region, something that I created. So it's not typical of Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay. It's just something I created. And, of course, if you know how to make wood, wooden cups, you can create your own gourd. It's not that difficult. Okay, let's keep on moving. Here's another example of an Argentine gourd. These sort of gourds, I would say, are popular in Buenos Aires. They're kind of like trendy, or they were trendy several years ago. They're not that popular anymore. They're nice gourds. They're made out of a wood called algarrobo, otherwise known as carob wood. Okay, carob wood is a lightweight, soft wood. Has a reddish tone to it, and I think it's a very good wood for drinking yerba mate. It allows good moisture content to breathe through and breathe out of it, and that's what you always want to look for in any gourd, any sort of wooden gourd. How does it handle moisture? How does it handle hot water? How does it handle expansion? Does the gourd dry very well, or does it hold on to too much moisture, or does it start cracking? Okay, then you could go to something really exotic. You know, this is a gourd made out of coconut shell. This is kind of exotic. You know, you're not going to find this anywhere hardly. Something that we just kind of threw together, an idea that we had. It's a nice gourd. It's very lightweight. The only thing that I would say with these sort of gourds is that you have to be very careful with heat. You don't want to put you definitely don't want to put boiling water in this because it will crack. Okay. And last but not least, this is another gourd, just another form factor, another shape to show you of Spanish cedar. And this gourd holds about 1.25 ounces. To 1.45 ounces. That's about 7 to 8 tablespoons. So you go hold a good amount of mate in these sort of gourds as long as there's deep holes. When you're looking for mate gourds like this size, sometimes you'll be fooled and the hole will only go down to here. So keep in mind when you buy gourds like this and you're really looking to hold a good amount of mate in it, the base of the inside should end around here. Not here. Otherwise, you're going to get half the capacity of yerba mate. All right, guys. Now that I kind of gave you an overview of the different types of gourds, the different shapes, the different sizes, so on and so forth, let us talk about the other necessary tool that you need, which is called the bombilla. Now, I pronounce it bombilla. Bombilla. You could also pronounce it bombilla. Now, the reason that I pronounce it bombilla is because I was living in Buenos Aires, the city of Buenos Aires of Argentina, and they have a distinct dialect there. It's called the Porteño dialect, okay? Now, that's the dialect that I learned, and that's the dialect that I speak when it comes to Spanish, at least. And they speak differently than the rest of the country. Some of the vocabulary is different. you call it Porteño Spanish, okay? So I pronounce it Bombisha, but the rest of the world outside of that River Plate area, in Argentina, which is Buenos Aires and Montevideo in Uruguay and Colonia in Uruguay, outside of that region, they pronounce it Bombilla, okay? Okay, and let me not, I would be remiss if I didn't actually tell you the way that they pronounce it in southern Brazil, and that's bomba, bomba. In southern Brazil, they say bomba, okay? So right here we have a spoon bombicha. Why is it called a spoon bombicha? Because it's kind of shaped like a spoon to some degree. Kind of has a flat shovel head. And by the way, if anybody wants, again, that number is 917-889. For those of you that can't watch the whole show, just head on over later on to youtube.com/circle. There, they will call it a bomba. Okay? Now, it has these preparations, these little tiny holes, probably about 50 or 60 on each side. In those regions of Uruguay and southern Brazil, they drink a mate that's very finely ground. It's very powdery. And the other versions, which are a little less powdery, and they're also grown in Brazil, but they're grown for the Uruguayan population, those mates, I call those gaucho mates, which are powdery mates grown in Brazil for the Uruguayan population. And some of those brands include Del Salvador, Sada, or powdery mate, because they allow the fine mate to be filtered and none of the powder gets through. And you drink it and everything is good. Everything is great. Okay? That's the spoon bombicha. Here's another spoon bombicha. This one is also, I guess I would say, semi-typical of southern Brazil. Now, if you were to ask somebody in Paraguay what this bombicha is best for, they would tell you it's best for cold yerba mate, also otherwise known as tereré. It's kind of difficult to pronounce, but it's called tereré. Basically, it's just cold yerba mate. You add yerba mate into the gourd. You add ice. You add additional herbs. Pour cold water in, and then you put in a bombicha. But these are both basically spoon bombichas. Very good, versatile bombichas that you could use for any single occasion. They won't fail you. Every Montero needs a spoon bombicha. Now, let's go back to the origins, okay? Right here, guys. This is the most typical yerba mate bombicha on the market right now. This is an Argentine, what I call double action bombicha. Why do I call it a double action bombicha? Because there's two mechanisms of filtration, okay? Basically, you have this outer filter, which is the coil. And behind the coil, you have the secondary filtration system, which are holes. Sometimes these are slits. Sometimes these are just diagonal slits, straight slits, or, like on this version, just holes. Then you pull this back, and boom, you have yourself a typical bombicha from Argentina, double-action bombicha, or some people call it a coil bombicha. Okay, guys, so those are your three typical bombichas. You have your Southern Brazil bomba, Southern Brazil spoon bombicha. You have your typical spoon bombicha, which both can be used for any sort of yerba mate, but they're designed to be used for powdery mate, mate that's super powdery and finely ground mate. Then you have your double action bombicha, which is typical of Argentina, and this mate works very well with Argentine, classical Argentine yerba mate, which we'll be drinking today. We'll be drinking Pipore from yerbamateland.com, which is one of my delightful mates that I love. I love this mate. It's great. If you haven't tried it, definitely try Pipure. Really good, really tasty. All right, guys. So I discussed the different types of yerba mate gourds. I discussed the various types of yerba mate bombichas, spoon bombicha, double action bombicha. Those are the two main ones. There are several other types, several other categories of bombichas, but they're outside the scope of this discussion. Okay, so now for the third segment of this video, let us make mate. Which gourd shall I use today? Today I'm going to use this little copita, okay? This little guy. Now, the general rule of thumb is to fill the gourd up anywhere between the halfway mark to 3/4 maximum, okay? I would say if you're a beginner, don't exceed the halfway mark. This just goes with any gourd, okay? So now I'm going to fill this up, the loose leaf mate, to the halfway mark. But we have a caller, so I'm going to allow this caller in. Hello, hello. What do we have?
Hey, my name is Roger from New Orleans. I just was browsing through Blog Talk and saw the title.
Nice. What's going on, Roger? You drink yerba mate?
Well, I've never had yerba mate. I'm familiar with it. And I was wondering, do they drink that in Brazil also?
Absolutely. They drink it in Brazil like it's water, southern Brazil. They drink it all day long. They love it there.
Okay, and because I'll be visiting Brazil pretty soon, and I had known that a certain part of Brazil was close to Argentina, and they have like the gaucho culture there around there.
Yes, yes. The southernmost three states in Brazil, that's mate country over there. That's where they love mate. They drink it all the time.
Okay. I'll basically be in Salvador and Rio and Sao Paulo. So I didn't know. I guess some people drink it in those places, huh?
Yeah, it's not as common. But, yes, you will find people there who do drink mate. But it's not really mate culture over there. It's more predominantly in the southern areas of Brazil. But you will find people who drink mate there, sure. And you'll probably be able to buy it there as well.
Okay. Now, where are you? What part of the country are you calling from?
New York.
New York. Okay. So,
New York.
Is there a way I'll be able to get yerba here in New Orleans? You think some of the Latino stores have?
You know, mate, you could get it in many different ways if you're in the United States. If you want the easy way, you could probably just find it at a Latin-based a Latin store. The sort of Latin stores that import food from South America, you'd probably find yerba mate there. And if you don't find yerba mate there, there are many websites online that you could order it from, and they'll be more than happy to ship it to you.
Okay.
There's many websites. We have our own couple websites, yerbamateland.com, circleofdrink.com. But there's a lot of other ones like yerbamate.com and Go Yerba Mate, Guayaquil, Mate Factor, Aviva. You got a lot of options.
Now, yerba mate, it's a tea, is it?
Well, it depends, because technically speaking, a tea only comes from one plant, the Camellia sinensis plant, which is where you get green tea, oolong tea,
right,
black tea, yellow tea, white tea. Most people just refer to tea as an infusion of any herb. Mate is a holly plant. Technically, it comes from the Ilex paraguayensis classification, but it is not a Camellia sinensis plant, no. So in that respect, no, it's not tea. But I call it tea, and a lot of people call it tea just to make life easier.
Okay, but it's a stimulant. Like, it has, like, caffeine in it?
Yes. Mate has caffeine in it, but the interesting thing is this. In my opinion, and in the opinion of thousands of other mate drinkers in the world, and even some scientists, mate is one of the only drinks that has caffeine, but you don't get any crashing or jittery effects. You actually get comforting feelings. You feel good. You get the energy of coffee, but without the jitters, and then you also get clarity of mind.
Okay.
Clarity of mind.
Okay.
You'll love it. Once you start drinking it, be careful, because you're going to be drinking it for the rest of your life.
Okay. Okay.
That's how good
Thank
it is.
You. Appreciate it.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. I love talking yerba mate.
Okay.
I drink this
website,
stuff every day.
Website?
Yeah, we have two websites. The main one is circleofdrink.com, and that's where all our own brands. And then we have yerbamateland.com, which are other brands of yerba mate.
Okay, thank you. I'll continue to listen by the laptop.
Okay, my friend, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, guys. That was a great little discussion. I thank the caller for calling in. So I already filled this up halfway, okay? Now, second step. And, guys, remember, don't get too crazy about this, okay? You're going to mess up. It took me years to really develop my techniques. So be patient with yourself when it comes to preparing yerba mate. Just be patient. Just breathe. Breathe. Take it easy. Don't take this thing too seriously. You're going to mess up. But with continued practice and dedication, you're going to become an excellent Matero. And again, a Matero is a yerba mate enthusiast. I'll tell you why I'm doing this in a second. Now, give it a couple of just gentle shakes. Not like aggressively, like, You don't go crazy here. Think like samba. Think how Brazilians move, okay? They kind of move like this. It's like, boom, just chill. Now, after a couple good shakes, you bring it back to about a 45-degree angle. And then you remove your palm, and you're going to have a little situation like this. This is just dust. That's okay. Just whatever. Just wipe that off. Some people lick it. Do whatever you want with it, all right? Now you're going to have a situation like this, okay? Now, the reason why we did this whole shaking situation, for two reasons. The main reason was to create your water hole. Your water hole is the hole where you're going to add the water, obviously. Wow, spilling all over. And it also brought the larger particles to the bottom of the gourd, and it brought the finer particles to the top of the gourd where your hand was. Okay? Now, the reason why you did that was because you're helping to create a natural filtration system by keeping the larger particles on the bottom. It helps filter the mate. And it helps balance the taste because the larger particles, which are the palos in Spanish, which means twigs, actually make the mate sweeter and they balance the taste. And the most bitter particles, which is called the polvo in Spanish, which means powder, come to the top. So now you have a situation where the taste is going to be more balanced. Now, as you hold this on a 45-degree angle, you take regular water, what I call dummy water, okay? Into the hole, and this is just regular water, room temperature water, then into the hole. The hole, once you get good, you could simultaneously pour while you revert the gourd back to an upward position. Get the dummy water. Good question. We added the dummy water basically to temper the mate. Now, a coffee aficionado would say to bloom the coffee. We're basically blooming the mate. Now, mate is a very sensitive herb, okay? You don't want to add the hot water directly to untempered yerba mate. Otherwise, it'll burn the herb and the nutrients will be extracted too rapidly. And you will compromise the lifetime value of the nutrients while you're drinking the mate. So basically, you're just going to burn out all the delicate compounds that you want to drink and want to be slowly released, not released in one shot like that, like an espresso. So that's why you added the dummy water, and you added that to your water hole. Now what you do is you just chill out. Let this sit for about 30 seconds to 1 minute, okay? You let the herb take its time to absorb that dummy water. is basically protecting the herb right now. You're basically encapsulating the herb, giving this level of protection that it's going to need, and it's going to prolong the taste of the mate, and it's going to help preserve all the amazing compounds and nutrients, which you'll learn about mate eventually if you keep on following Boom Bombisha. Now, you insert this alongside of the wall where the water hole was, okay? I'm sorry about the angles here. The angles are horrible, but let me try to help you. Insert this along the wall of the water hole. Slowly insert it, okay? Once you insert it in, let me show you a shot. You kind of just move the Bombisha around a little bit, okay? Just a little bit on the bottom, kind of tuck under this pile of mate and pull up a little bit just to add some space around the filter. You want to maintain the space around the filter, okay? Now, once your Bombisha is in the gourd, like so, you grab your mate water. Let me grab my mate water. Okay, what is mate water? Mate water is water that has been heated up to the proper temperature. That proper temperature is anywhere between 160 degrees Fahrenheit to 100 and let's call it 85 degrees Fahrenheit. So that's something like 78 degrees Celsius, upwards of 82 degrees Celsius, around there roughly. You never want to use boiling water, okay? Like I said, mate is very sensitive. If you use boiling water, you're just going to bake open the mate too quickly. And yeah, some people like that. I won't say don't do it, but the larger problem with drinking boiler water is thermal injury to your esophagus, basically burning your throat. You don't want to burn your throat. The more you burn your throat over the duration of years and years and decades, the higher your chances are of getting esophageal cancer, cancer of your throat. You don't want to drink hot boiling water. Don't do that, especially if you're going to be a yerba mate drinker. Take care of yourself, okay? Some of you have already heard this association of yerba mate and cancer. Okay, now, really, that has nothing to do with the herb itself. It predominantly has to do burning yourself. In those countries such as Uruguay, Argentina, and Paraguay, not so much in Paraguay, they like cold mate, but mostly in Argentina and Brazil and Uruguay. And no offense to the mate drinkers over there, but the ones that I know love to drink scalding hot boiling water, which is insane. You don't want to do that. You do that, you're going to burn your throat, and you're going to increase your chances of getting cancer. Okay? Now, this video is for educational purposes only. Everything I'm saying today is for educational purposes that has not been approved by the FDA. So with any herb that you're looking into, including yerba mate, do your own due diligence. Talk to your own doctors. Talk to your own geniuses. Okay? I'm not any one of those things. I'm just a person talking about yerba mate. I love yerba mate. Now, your mate water, you kind of need one of these guys, okay? You don't kind of need one of these. You absolutely need a thermos. Absolutely, okay? This is a very integral part of the traditional yerba mate experience. Now, over the years, I've used many thermoses, but the one that I found that I like the most so far is Stanley. I love Stanley. Stanley used to be an American company. Now, I think the Japanese own it. But it's a very reliable thermos, and if you want to compare other thermoses, just do a Google search for Circle of Drink yerba mate thermoses, and you will find a video that we produced several months ago comparing all sorts of thermoses. Now, another good brand of thermoses is Zohirushu from Japan. They're amazing. I use their AirPods, the huge thermoses, to store 2.5 gallons of water. I have a lot of mate circles all day long with all sorts of people, so I need a lot of hot water all the time. So if you want to get a really good, technically it's called the air pot, but it's basically a large thermos that can hold at least a gallon or two of hot water. Those are the things you see in 7-Eleven where you press down and the coffee comes out. Okay? I highly recommend Zohirushu. Zohirushu. Do an Amazon search. You could buy that on Amazon. You could even buy these on Amazon. Or you could buy them at Target or any one of those sporting goods stores. You'll find these thermoses. Okay. Now, on to the fun part. Pour your yerba mate water into the water hole. and take your time. Make sure it's a nice, slow, steady stream. Now, this first yerba mate is consumed by the cebador. Cebador in Spanish means server. Now, the server has the most important role here. The server is the gateway to the yerba mate circle. What is the yerba mate circle? Well, as you saw in my last video from last week, Tuesday, the yerba mate circle is a gathering of people to drink yerba mate. Now, it could technically be just you. I'm alone right now, and I'm drinking yerba mate. I'm a circle of one. But in Argentina, when I was living there, and you guys have heard this story a million times already, but when I was living there, I saw a group of women drinking yerba mate on the floor inside of my residence I was living. I was living at a college, basically. And they invited me over, and they said, come on over, Dave. They didn't know my name, obviously. They said, come on over and drink some of this. I said, what is this? They said, yerba mate, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to jump forward. I started drinking it. And then as the weeks progressed and I started to be invited to more of these gatherings, I started to see that every time we sat down, it always formed in a circle. So I just started saying, okay, yerba mate circle. Now, really, the yerba mate circle is essentially just a symbol for connection, togetherness, brotherhood, sisterhood, peace, tranquility, ideas, construction of ideas, destruction of ideas, synergy of ideas. You'll notice that once you begin drinking yerba mate in a circle, this is the magic of yerba mate. I don't know how it does this. I don't know. Scientists don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody could quantify this. But yerba mate, take my word for it, as you begin drinking it, and as you begin sharing it, you begin to form bonds with people. You begin to have these sort of enlightening conversations with people. You begin to attract certain people to your life. I don't know how mate does this. I don't know. All I know is that it does this. And you'll see, ask any mate drinker, any matero who has been drinking mate, seriously drinking it, anybody who's passionate about mate, ask them about this effect, this magical effect of yerba mate. And I bet most of them will attest to this magical quality that mate brings people together. That is what a yerba mate circle is. Sharing mate with people, friends and family alike, strangers, doesn't matter. Share mate with them, and you'll notice after several cycles of mate, cycles every time a turn is finished, after several of those, you'll just feel more relaxed. Yes, one could argue that the various compounds in mate, the various xanthines, various compounds that relax the mind and open up your brain waves, expand your brain waves and literally help blood flow to the brain. One could argue that those are the things that are responsible for this, what I call creative clarity and friendship-inducing qualities of mate. But I believe that it's beyond those things, much more than those things. Okay? So the server is the person that prepares the mate. The server must know everything about the traditional way of yerba mate. You must know these things. If you don't know these things, don't be the server. You can't be the server yet. Just watch somebody else. Learn from somebody else. Watch a ton of YouTube videos. Then you become the server. The server is somebody that can't miss any steps. The server must take on the responsibility of learning about the various types of yerba mate, of learning about the various types of gourds, of learning about the various types of bombichas. It's a great honor, great responsibility. Takes time, okay? So the server is the one who has done all the work, who's done all the history, has done all the tasting, has done all the preparation, has brought the mate, has brought the thermos, has heated the water, has chosen the mate, okay? Has taught the other people in the circle that they didn't know about mate, has told them about mate. That is the role of the server, or the cebador in Spanish. So the server drinks the first yerba mate, which is called the dummy yerba mate, the dummy mate. Now, the dummy mate is going to be kind of weird tasting and lukewarm. Remember, that's because we added the dummy water, the cold water, or the room temperature water, and then I topped it off with a little bit of hot water. So right now, this is kind of just like, eh, that's kind of like a little mush. I don't care. I love it still. I'm going to drink this dummy mate in peace and happiness right now. Okay. Now, it is very polite, and it's very common for you to slurping is the greatest sign, or one of the greatest signs of respect when it comes to drinking your mate. That means that you have finished the mate in its entirety. You finished the entire gourd. Okay? Now, yerba mate, obviously, you're dealing with hygiene. You know, you're dealing with germs and bacteria. And some people may say, well, I don't want to share a spoon with anybody else. I don't really get germs and all this stuff. I'm not making fun of you if you're thinking that way. I used to think that way. What changed my mind about that was California. You probably heard the story already, but I'll tell you real quickly. In California, I love California, especially Northern California. It was very common for people to say, here, man, take a swig of my iced tea. Take a swig of my juice. Very common. Strangers. And I was always taken aback. I was like, wow, this person doesn't even know me, and they're offering me to take a swig, whatever. I love that. I love that openness, that open mentality of not worrying about so much about germs and this and that. Now, I'm not saying that's unwarranted to not worry about, you know, germs. Of course, take care of yourself, and you don't want to drink with somebody who's sick. But in New York, we live in a culture where that's just not popular. That's just not popping, as a New Yorker would say. That's not popping, man, sharing your drinks with people you don't know. That's just not cool. But in Argentina, it's so typical. Like I said, the first night I was there, they basically jammed this straw into my mouth and said, drink this. They didn't know me from anything. Okay? So the server drinks the first mate, drinks it out of the bombilla. And this is called the dummy mate. Now, technically, the server drinks the first two, okay? Now, why is the server drinking these first mates? To ensure the quality, that's why. And also to drink the most bitter mates, because this is going to be one of the most bitter mates, the second one. He's basically, or she's basically saying, okay, guys, I'm going to take a hit for the team. I'm going to drink the first one and two mates. One that's kind of lukewarm and kind of weird and mushy, the first dummy mate. And then I'm not only going to do that, I'm going to drink the second dummy mate. That's going to be the most bitter mate, because that's technically the first mate with hot water, totally hot water. Okay, after I do my slurp and I take my time and I finish this gourd, I prepare another one and then I pass it to my right. The person to my right is going to be the next person to drink the yerba mate. When that person is done drinking the mate, he or she will pass it back to me, and then I will prepare another gourd, okay? And I'm constantly fine-tuning the mountain of mate. I'm constantly recalibrating the water hole and the mountain of mate, and, you know, making sure that the water is the right temperature. Remember, the servidor must constantly do these things, must constantly take on the responsibility to ensure that you are serving the finest possible mate that you could produce at any given time. This is about self-mastery too, okay? Anybody who's into something where they're trying to develop themselves, trying to develop your art, knows what I'm talking about when I say this word, you know, self-mastery, okay? As you begin to learn about yerba mate and begin to prepare it, it almost becomes a gateway into your own soul. You begin to see what you're really made of. You begin to see how patient you are. You begin to see how willing are you to learn new things. You begin to see how patient are you with people, because you'll see that people who don't know about mate, neophyte drinkers, will do all sorts of crazy things, touching the bombilla, which I'll talk about in a second, pulling it out, so on and so forth. So the servidor must be the most balanced and in-tune person of the circle, so to speak. Okay? So after that person drinks the mate, now let me just interject with myself. That person, how long does the person have to drink the mate? Should they let it sit? Should they kind of sleep on the mate, just take their time? Should they put it down? This is the thing. You want to keep the circle moving. You don't want to just be a hog and just, you know, kind of just like, yeah, just talking about stuff and just like sipping every here and there. 5 minutes goes by, 10 minutes goes by, you're still just yapping, holding the gourd, you're having a good time, but you've totally forgotten that you got this gourd in your hand, and the other people want to drink the mate. That's not cool, man. It's not cool. You got to pass the gourd. You got to keep the cipher moving. Pass. Sip, sip, pass. So, basically, just be responsible, okay? When you have the gourd, remember, you guys are there for fun. You're there to have a good conversation. So it's not about, you don't have to be fast about it and drink it right away, but you also don't want to be too laid back about it and just hold on to the gourd. So if I were to put a numerical value on the amount of time that someone should have a gourd, I would say on average, 2 to 3 minutes. You know, after 3 minutes, you're kind of pushing it. If you pass 5 minutes with the gourd, you're just kind of messing up the cycle, man. You're messing up the circle. So let's just say, you know, take your time with it, but don't exceed about 3 to 4 minutes, you know, 5 maximum. But you'll get the hang of it, and you'll see. You know, it's usually just a couple sips, several sips, and then it's done. Now, this applies to the server as well as the participants of the Mate Circle, the Bombisha. Don't mess with the Bombisha. If you are the server, the servidor, you can mess with the Bombisha. If you need to move it around, if you need to adjust it, go ahead and do that. Politely tell your guest not to pull this out, not to manipulate it, because it's a very delicate situation down here, what I call the yerba mate ecosystem. It's an ecosystem, okay? Now, if you disturb that ecosystem, you might mess with the suction of the Bombisha. You don't want to do that. That's not good. So be careful and politely remind your participants not to touch the Bombisha. Now, generally speaking, you definitely, it's okay for anybody to hold the Bombisha like this. That's fine if you want to, you know. But it's not okay to touch the tip. No, don't do that. Because think about it. Are your hands really that clean? You know, what did you just touch? You know, did you just wash your hands when you went to the bathroom? Who knows? I don't know. The other people don't know. So don't touch something that somebody's going to put in their mouth. That's just adding another layer of vulnerabilities. You don't want to do that, okay? So just sip it, and that's it, okay? Now, another form of etiquette when it comes to a traditional yerba mate drinking, if you are sick, you should not be drinking mate with other people. It's just, I personally, I'm a little crazy, okay? So if I see somebody that's sick and, you know, they have a cold, they have the flu, I'm a different sort of individual. I don't really care that much, so I'm going to share mate with them, you know, because I'm dealing with something else. I'm dealing with, you know, controlling my immune system. I'm dealing with Ayurveda. I have my other techniques of protecting my body from other things. So I'm not worried about catching a cold from somebody. I'm not worried about catching whatever, a flu from somebody. My immune system is okay. I don't have to worry about that at all. Some people, if you know that you catch cold easily, if you know that you catch the flu easily, then obviously that's going to be outside of your comfort level to share mate with someone that's sick. But the general rule is, if you are sick, and this is just the general rule, feel free to break it if you want, you should abstain from being a part of a yerba mate circle, and you should just go home and drink mate on your own and get better, then come back, call up your friends and say, dude, all right, man, I'm feeling okay now. Can we have that mate circle that I missed the other day? And your friend, being the great friend that he or she is, will say, yeah, sure, come on over. Let's drink a fresh gourd. Okay? What else can I talk about when it comes to traditional yerba mate? I already spoke about the gourds. Gourds come in all different shapes and sizes. Generally speaking, in Argentina, they have smaller gourds. Uruguay, they have a little larger. And then upwards in Brazil, southern Brazil, they have huge, huge gourds. These things called cuias. They call them cuias. Basically a large squash gourd. There's various forms of bombichas. You've got the spoon bombicha, and you have the double action bombicha. Now, there's various types of yerba mate. Let's discuss that a little bit as I pour myself another fresh cycle. Oh, that's the word I want to talk about, cycle. What is a cycle again? So the cycle is every single time that somebody consumes a yerba mate gourd. That's called one cycle. So you can have several cycles, okay? Somebody's calling in. Let's see what they have to say, and maybe we'll share some, learn something new or share some new information. Hello, who do we have?
Hey, we have Steven.
Steven, what's going on?
Not too much. Just heard you dropping my name earlier, so I thought I'd call in.
Yeah, you're the perfect person I need right now, because I'm lacking right now when it comes to southern Brazil yerba mate culture, bombas and cuyas and all those things that you know so much about.
Yeah, man. I'm actually rocking a huge gourd right now that I just picked up. I just got back from Brazil yesterday. Actually, and I bought a pretty big new cuya, and I'm sipping on some good chimarrón right now.
Yes. How was the trip?
Oh, the trip was awesome, man. It was pretty crazy. We took like 10 flights in about 12 days, and you know, I bought a ton of stuff, and we saw some really amazing stuff. We went to the Iguazu waterfall, and it was great.
Iguazu. I never actually made it up there, man. How was it? It was nice?
Oh, it was awesome. It was amazing, and it was kind of a cloudy day, so the park was just empty. It was great.
Wow. So, Steven, if you don't mind, you want to just kind of fill in where I left off in terms of, like, filling the gap in terms of comparing typical Brazilian yerba mate culture in terms of the gourd sizes and the bombichas or bombas that they use compared to Argentina and Uruguay?
Yeah, I mean, I think you did a pretty good job. You talked about how, you know, like the typical Brazilian gourds are usually at least, you know, a little bit bigger than the kind of traditional Argentine gourd. You know, not everyone in Brazil rocks the really, really big gourd, you know, but I think on average, yeah, the capacity of a even considerably smaller, you know, inside the actual range, the smaller of the Brazilian gourds are probably going to be larger than a comparably sized Argentine gourd or Uruguayan gourd.
And what about the bombichas there?
Yeah, I mean, going along with, you know, the larger gourds, the bombas, you know, like you said, they're also, you know, larger because they have to, you know, get all the way down in those large gourds. And, they use the round circle styles. I also have noticed that, you know, how they make the bombicha that open up so you can clean them better. The ones in Brazil, they usually open up different than the ones in Argentina.
Oh, which ones? Like the, you're talking about like the double action ones or ones with the swivel where you can swivel off the filter?
Yeah, so there's the kind that the kind of double action one where the spring kind of opens up, and then there's the one where you kind of unscrew and then the entire filter kind of opens up. Brazil basically have it so that it's kind of like the second style where the entire bottom of the filter, the round part, unscrews so you can get up in there and you can use a pipe cleaner or something to, you know, clean it all out.
Right. And I'm sure that there are some listeners who want to know what the whole chimarrão, and I know you've come on the show before and spoken about it, so I don't expect you to go too deep into it, but just give the listeners a little description of what chimarrão is and how does that compare to other mates, and what's the whole distinction between Brazil growing mate for the Uruguayans and how that mate differs from the local Brazilian mate known as chimarrão.
Yeah, so chimarrão, you know, is the traditional hot mate that they drink, you know, in principally southern Brazil. It's very, very fresh. It's very, very powdery. Usually Brazilians, the gaúchos, that's how they call themselves, you know, down in southern Brazil, they don't really like drinking match or mate with an herb that's more than like a month old, you know, so it's very, very different than say the herb in Argentina or Paraguay, you know, that's aged for a year, 2 years even. You know, the Brazilian herb is just very, very fresh, very raw, very green.
Right. And what's your take on how is the yerba mate circle conducted in Brazil? Is it the same way that it's conducted in Argentina and Paraguay and Uruguay? Is it the same situation where you have the server, you pass the gourd to one direction, and you have the sort of same rules of etiquette? Is it similar or is it different?
Yeah, I think it really is more or less the same. You know, you have the server, the cevador, and then, you know, he prepares the cuya. And then, you know, he's the one that you always pass back to him. He refills the gourd and he passes it around the circle and throwing talk. And I like what you're talking about earlier about, you know, how not hogging the gourd. They always say, oh, it's not a microphone, and referring to the bomba.
No, it's not a microphone. Yes.
Yeah.
I remember they used to get mad at me sometimes when I didn't know any better in Argentina. And I would just have to gourd for about 5-10 minutes. They'd be polite because, you know, they're very polite about it. But then at one point they'd be like, come on, Dave, like, you got to pass the gourd, man.
Yeah, I know, like, especially when you know, Americans go into a circle for the first time, a lot of times they're talking and they'll use that to kind of disguise the fact that they're letting the water cool down, and you know, that's also a pretty big no-no.
That's a no-no. That's a no-no. And the whole thing I was mentioning before, which I find here in North America happening all the time, when I first drink mate with people, they instinctively, it seems, grab the bombisha and start stirring everything around and start pulling it out and all sorts of stuff. Have you had any experience with that?
I mean, I always tell people when I give them, you know, shimahung the first time, I just tell them right away, hey, don't touch the straw. I almost feel like it's even more of a big deal with shimahung because it's so powdery. It is such a fragile, you know, environment in there. I feel like with, you know, a lot of art pine cuts, you can kind of get away with pulling it out, putting the straw back in. But with shimahung, if you pull the straw out, you know, you might as well throw it away. It doesn't collapse on itself a lot.
Right, right, of course. Now, I just kind of wanted to kind of compare and contrast the traditional way and just generally speaking, you know, across all the countries in the Southern Cone, experience of drinking your mate the traditional way as opposed to making it like the traditional tea out of a tea bag or a French press or a tea infuser. I personally drink that way all the ways, but I always come back to the traditional method. Every day I wake up in the morning and I make a gourd, and I make the gourds all throughout the day, and I literally – I kid you guys not, and I take a couple sips of mate right before I go to sleep, and that's just a normal day for me. I drink it all day long. How would you kind of, you know, convey that to people, that experience? Is it more of an experience, more of like something very intimate where you're making the gourd, or would you say when you make it out of the French press or the teapot, you lose that intimacy or that kind of fun culture factor of making it out of the gourd? Just what's your take on that whole situation of making it out of a gourd? How do you feel? Does it bring you joy to drink out of the gourd? Do you hate drinking out of the French press or the teapot?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I feel kind of bad, you know, saying anything, you know, negative about a certain person's, you know, way of doing something. You know, if they're drinking it out of the French press or the teapot and that's the way they enjoy it, you know, more power to you if it means you're drinking.
Right.
The herb, you know, but in my own personal life, in my own personal experience, I mean, I have to drink it out of gourd. I kind of just don't really like it.
You just need to. You've got to have that gourd.
Yeah, man. I need something to hold on to. I need, you know, that the heat that radiates from the gourd in my hand. You know, I need that whole process of just preparing it in the gourd and, you know, pouring out the herb. And you know, it very much is a labor of love, and I feel like, in my own personal opinion, you know, making it in the French press just kind of sterilizes the whole process and makes it a little more cold.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. No, I feel you. It's like with the gourd, that's the first experience that I ever had, the first point of contact I've ever had with yerba mate, and I just never left it. I like you, I love preparing mate. I love the whole ritual. I love thinking about it sort of like wine almost, where there's different varieties, different cuts, different flavors, different bombichas you could use, sort of like how you could have, you know, different glasses of wine or different types of instruments or tools and vessels for your other hobbies out there. So mm-hmm. I love that whole aspect of it. But I just want to make it clear to people, I think mate, some mate is better than no mate. If you drink it from a French press or you drink it from a tea bags, you're still going to get those same compounds and you're still going to get that same energy that you get from it,
sure,
from the gourd. So go with any way you want to drink it. But the traditional way is something that, as Stephen will agree, it's just a magical experience. You know, some people are off-put by sharing the bombisha. What do you think about that, Stephen, sharing the bombisha with people? Are you scared of the germs or is it okay? Do you inspect people?
I mean, you know,
you only share with friends.
Basically, like what you said earlier, you know, I'd probably be, you know, too keen about sharing it if someone's got, you know, a runny nose or if they're, you know, their lungs. But I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't really, you know, I'm totally fine with sharing as long as, you know, you are not obviously infected with something.
And the scientist in this article proposed a theory that since yerba mate is so antiviral and antibacterial, when you drink it with somebody, the mate offsets any chance of catching any disease or things like that in terms of bacteria. Now, this is just a theory of one scientist. I'm not saying this is, you know, categorically true. I'm not saying this is a fact. But I found that very interesting that a scientist would bring that up and say, you know, the chances of you getting something are highly diminished because mate can potentially prevent that or mitigate those transferring of bacteria or viruses from mouth to mouth. I found that
very
interesting.
I've heard stuff like that. I've also heard, you know, kind of the same sort of thing backing up why you should use, like, for example, like a sterling silver straw because, you know, sort of silver, you know, reportedly has antimicrobial properties as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, you know, at the end of the day, if it really matters that much. You know, if you're sitting that close to someone who's contagious, might, you know, get the disease just from them breathing too close to you. So I don't really know, you know, really at the end of the day, if it you know, makes it better, if it makes it worse. But, you know, I think that's just whatever you're personally comfortable with.
Of course. So you were listening on the conversation earlier. Did I miss anything in terms of yerba mate circles, traditionally yerba mate circles? I spoke about the gourd. I spoke about the bombichas or the bombas. I spoke about, you know, the rudimentary ways of preparing yerba mate. And then I kind of spoke about the whole ambiance, feeling, setting, environment, the collectiveness of coming together in a yerba mate circle. Those are pretty much the major components in my mind of what it means to drink yerba mate traditionally. But maybe you and I just have a discussion on different types of yerba mate. I know we've had this discussion already, but I'm sure there's a lot of new listeners out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to do that? Just have a little chat?
Sure, yeah.
Sure. Cool. So for myself, as you already know, I'm a big fan of classical Argentine yerba mate. For those of you guys listening, I define classical yerba mate, Argentine yerba mate, as a mate that has, and remember, each mate has a cut, and the cut is the composition of the leaves and the stems and the powder. Classical Argentine yerba mate usually has larger, broader cut leaves, or in Spanish they would say hojas. It usually includes a healthy amount of palos, the white little stems in there, which help make the mate sweeter. And it also has a relatively small amount of the dust, or what you would call the polvo in Spanish. I love that yerba mate the most, only because I was first exposed to that mate, and it kind of just stuck with me. So I drink a lot of classical Argentine mate. But on the other end of the spectrum, I know Steven likes the and I always pronounce it a little weird, the shimajou, the shimajou.
Mm-hmm.
And are you still a drinker of Argentine mate, or are you mostly like 90% your Brazilian shimajou?
You know, I do still drink, you know, Argentine styles. I do, you know, I have a package of Salmon de Especial right now in my house. I've got I think enough for some of the normal stuff too. I will admit though, that's probably the wolf herb that I do drink the least of.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably, you know, a 60% shimajou, and then like from there, like 20%. I do like that a lot as well. And then I also do drink quite a bit of, you know, the yerba uruguaya. I really like Canaria. I really like them too. And I do drink quite a bit of it as well. But yeah, I'm definitely kind of more on the gaucho mate, as opposed to the more traditional Argentine styles.
Right. And I'm trying, like, I think you actually inspired me a lot, to be honest, to begin getting into the Brazilian, the local Brazilian mate, like Jimangu. And the thing about it is that one of the mates that I really fell in love with several years ago when I first started drinking mate was Mate Factor. Now, that was back then. At the time, I loved it. For me, it was like the best mate in the world. I love that kind of maltiness of it. And I really respected it. And I think it's still a good mate. But the thing about that mate is that for me, and this is always typical of all Brazilian mates, is that when I compare a Brazilian mate like Mate Factor with a typical Argentine mate like, let's say, Rosa Mate, the cycle, the length of the cycle is shorter. The cycle, guys, is the how strong also is the mate going to last? Is it going to last a long time, or is it going to become very watery or what you call lavado? In my experience, mate is like Mate Factor didn't last as long, the longer cycle as the Argentine mate. Do you find that the case, or that's something that you probably don't even consider at this point because you're just so in tune with that sort of mate?
You know, I will say that I don't think I've ever drank a gourd of Argentine mate until it was lavado. I don't know if it's just because I don't like it as much, and I'm not as prone to, you know, drink liter upon liter upon liter of it. But I will say, you know, I think that's something where the giant gourd size versus the very small gourd size kind of balances out, you know, the length of how long you can really enjoy that herb. For example, you know, the gourd that I'm looking at now, you know, it's probably, you know, looking at it, it's about 10 inches tall.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I put in a good, probably, I tried actually counting the scoop of how much herb I put in there. I used just kind of the normal coffee scoop. I can actually look at it right now. I've got it here.
I
have a more scientific number. So that the scoop I used is 1/8 of a cup. And I think I've used 4 of those. You know, a good, maybe 5. You know, so whatever that about to be. We can't really think
that
about
holds
that.
A lot of
but, you know, it is. A lot more herb than you would typically use just because of the, you know, the gourd's larger, but at the same time, that does, you know, kind of balances out how long it lasts. You know, I will drink a single gourd all day long and, you know, don't really notice any, you know, blandness halfway through. You know, I have done, you know, the hemisphere switching with the herb as well. I'll do that sometimes. But with the powdery, you know, it really does, like, if you kind of stick with it, it will eventually soak all the way through, and you can't just kind of absorb all the flavor of the entire, you know, body of dry earth throughout the day without a hemisphere switch. Although the hemisphere switch does kind of make it get that and kind of boost that second wind of the gourd, but you don't necessarily need to.
Yeah.
You know, anyway, long way to answer the question. I really feel
no, it's fine.
That that the cycle necessarily is smaller. Although I will say with Mate Factor, I have drank Mate Factor. I do find that that specific herb does wash incredibly quickly.
Yeah.
But compared to, like right now, I'm drinking an herb from southern Brazil called Pagliosa. It's from Pagliosa, rather. It's from Catarina.
How do I say that? Pagliosa?
Pagliosa, yeah.
Pagliosa.
It's from the state right above Rio Grande do Sul. Santa Catarina, and it's really, really strong. It's very, very consistent. The thing that I like about it is it doesn't have a super kind of really kind of almost gross, kind of almost super bitter punch. It has a little bit of a stronger note at the beginning, but it kind of dips off a little bit, and it just gets really smooth for a really long time, and the flavor doesn't really change. And that's something that I have noticed with other, for example, like a lot of Uruguayan herbs, it'll be incredibly, almost off-puttingly strong at the very beginning and dip off very quickly into a more comfortable kind of flavor profile, whereas, you know, kind of the better Brazilian herbs don't really do that. They just kind of stay consistent throughout the length of the cycle.
Right. And what I found, and this is sort of like a metaphysical observation, but what I found with the Brazilian herbs, the Brazilian mate, the Jimangus, like Jimangu, which is a brand right over here, I found with this mate that the energy is different than an Argentine mate. And when I say the energy, I feel like in some cases, I feel like it's more of like a cleaner energy in many ways, like a calmer, softer energy. I get more of like a insightful energy when I drink that. It's more like I feel like I'm drinking the forest more, like the herbs. I feel like this sort of mate is so fresh. The bioavailability, you know, as a scientist would say, it's so high compared to the mate that's aged that it is a different experience. I consider it an entirely different experience. But if I compare that to Argentine mate or mate that's been aged, in my opinion, the mate that has been aged usually is more complex for me. At least it has more layers of taste profile to some degree. But of course, my experience with Jimangu and Shimahau is very limited. I've only had Mate Factor, Jimangu, and other mates that have been grown in Brazil, but aren't traditional local Brazilian mates for the Brazilian market. But what I really love about those mates is the maltiness. I don't know. I get this like maltiness factor when I'm drinking Jimangu and Del Salvador, which is a little different, but it's from the same region. I get this like malty, rich sort of Guinness stout factor going on, which I really love. So every time I drink the Jimangu, that's what I appreciate the most. I love that creaminess, that maltiness, which I don't really get from any other mates. Not really. The only other mates I get that maltiness from is like Del Salvador or Sada or even Canadias to some extent. But when I drink the true traditional Shimahau, I really get it. And that's what I really appreciate about that mate. Even though I don't drink it every day like Argentine mate, but when I do drink it, that's the thing that really just keeps me going with it. Have you found that too, when you that sort of maltiness that you've come to love, or is that something you wouldn't use to describe that mate?
Yeah, maltiness is definitely something that's present in a lot of Shimahauins. I don't know what the technical pluralization of that word is.
Yeah.
The herbs that tend to favor don't have as much of that maltiness. They kind of favor more on the more kind of raw grassy. But they definitely do have that kind of just warm, I guess you would say, malty kind of notes in the back. Not as much as Del Salvador, which is just incredibly malty. I mean, I sometimes don't even believe that actually is, the same plant just with how different it tastes. But I would agree that definitely is present in the Shimahau a lot more than, say, a Pasamonte or a Cruz de Malta or something like that.
Right. I agree with that. And over this, last couple of years, I get emails from people who want to actually go to the Southern Cone. And for those of you that don't know what the Southern Cone, that term basically refers to Argentina, Uruguay, and Brazil, Southern Brazil, in respect to yerba mate, at least. And I get a lot of emails from people saying, where do I go to learn about mate? I instinctively tell them to go to Buenos Aires, but, somebody else might say, go to Uruguay, or somebody else like, you, Stephen, you might say, well, go to Southern Brazil. So I guess let's talk a little bit about that. What are some of the places that somebody asked you where they could go to learn about yerba mate culture? Where would you tell them?
I mean, I would definitely tell them go to, Porto Alegre, which is the capital of state, Rio Grande do Sul. That's actually where I was for about the first half of my trip. It doesn't have as much of a kind of, very traditional gaucho culture. You won't see as many people walking around with, the big boots and the big white shirts and cowboy hats. You won't see that as much, but you will, see people drinking Shimahau everywhere. If you go watch the sunset by the river, the entire kind of grassy hillside there is just covered with couples and families drinking Shimahau, watching the sunset. You go to the park, you'll see grandmas and grandpas sitting on the benches drinking Shimahau like you would maybe see, them feeding the pigeons here in the United States.
Yeah.
So you definitely, in Porto Alegre, you cannot go wrong. They have the big market there where they sell herb, in bulk. You can buy it by the gram or by the kilo. You don't have to, buy a whole big package if you want to try a bunch. I actually bought, I posted a picture on the Circle
Drink bag.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Where I bought,
tell us
like
a little bit about
10
that.
Different
so you could
brands.
Walk in there and just, you buy it by the gram?
Yep. You just walk in and you point, I want that brand. Give me 200, 300 grams of, madrugada or butter. And it'll scoop it up and put it in a plastic bag for you.
Wow. And it's fresh.
Yep. They have all the dates marked there. So everyone, you can see when it was harvested, when, it was packaged, and everything that I saw was, the oldest was about 2 weeks old.
Wow, that's amazing. And what's your favorite Brazilian yerba mate? Or maybe you don't have a favorite.
Like,
you got too many. If you had to take one to an island, yeah, what brand would you take to an island with you if you were going to be on the island for a year?
That is a hard question, but I think I would say Barão Premio.
Barão Premio.
That is still my favorite. There's a lot of good brands, but I still think that is my go-to day-to-day.
Right, right. And now if you had to take an Argentine brand, which Argentine brand would you take?
Probably Rosamonte, the normal kind.
Nice. And if you had to take a Uruguayan brand, and remember, guys, Uruguayan brands are not grown in Uruguay. They are grown in southern Brazil for the Uruguayan market.
That's a hard one.
Del Salvador.
Maybe Del Salvador, or maybe even, this is going to be really bad. Is Galaxy is your Uruguayan cut, right?
Yeah. Nice.
It would be those two, I think.
Nice. I'm glad you like that. Sweet.
I feel like Galaxy has all the great, real strong points of Canarias, but it's a lot smoother than Canarias, so it kind of makes it easier to enjoy on a day-to-day level.
Right, right. Totally. And I just want to kind of convey to the listeners again that, you know, it's a journey when it comes to drinking mate traditionally out of a gourd, whether using a bombilla. But once you get over that initial learning curve of what bombillas to use, you know, how to prepare the mate, how to do this whole inversion, which I showed you before. And remember, there's so many techniques, probably hundreds of techniques. I just showed you a few. Steven has tons of his own techniques. He's really an expert, I would say, more on the Brazilian mate. I learned a lot, Steven, about Brazilian mate that I didn't even know about. So thank you for that, brother.
No problem.
When it comes to this, it's just a journey. Take your time. I don't know about you, but I notice a lot of people get stressed out about it. That's why I'm always telling people, don't get stressed out about it. Just take your time. Because when I first started making mate traditionally, I didn't know anything. I was burning the mate. I was using hot water. I was spilling it.
Yep.
All the time, my stuff was getting tapado. You know, my bombilla was getting tapado, and that means clogged in Spanish. All the time, my friends in Argentina were making fun of me, like, Dave, you don't know what you're doing. Like, step aside. But that was all a learning experience for me because I took the time after that to really begin to perfect my techniques. And honestly, my bombilla never gets clogged anymore. And, you know, it just never gets clogged anymore. I'm sure your bombilla never gets clogged anymore, hardly ever, if anything. And it just takes time, you know. What would you tell people who are just getting into mate and want to drink it the traditional way? How would you kind of, you know, encourage them to proceed?
You know, it's a lot of people, you know, like you said, do kind of struggle with the clog. You know, I would just say, you know, buy a cheap brand, and, you know, and just make it over and over and over. That's actually what I did. I bought the absolute worst, cheapest, awful brand that you could buy in Brazil that I think you can't even drink. It made me so sick the first time I had it. I bought it literally just so I could practice. And, you know, I say do that over and over and over until you can consistently, you know, brew or cebar, you know, a gourd without it clogging, and then you don't have to, you know, waste your really delicious expensive herbs, you know, while you practice.
Yeah.
And if you really just, you know, are getting frustrated and then you just want to drink some herb, you know, you can also buy, they sell them in Brazil. I'm sure they sell them in Argentina too. They sell kind of like little cheese, almost like a cheesecloth filter that you can tie on the end of your straw.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that kind of eliminates 98% of the problem anyway. So,
right.
you know, just kind of are getting really frustrated, just slap one of those on the bottom of your straw and, you know, sip away. No harm, no foul.
Right. No, that's totally correct. You're right. Those little cheesecloth filters you put around the end of your bombilla, and that just helps filter everything. Another question I get a lot, and I'm sure you've received this too, how much mate could somebody drink in a day? You know, sometimes I get a question saying, should I just use the same herb in the gourd the entire day, or should I switch it, or should I let the mate water just be steeped every time I pour the water and just let it sit? What's your take on that? I know there's no hard rule at all, but if somebody says, you know, how much mate could I drink from the gourd every day, how much would it be an acceptable level of mate?
You know, I think you should drink as much as your body will allow you, you know, without feeling like you're waterlogged. You know, because you can't, you know, drink too much water and you start to feel, you know, sick, basically, because your stomach's full of water. You know, definitely don't drink it too fast, but, you know, if you feel perfectly fine drinking, you know, 4 liters a day, then you should drink 4 liters a day. I'm at probably, I think I've hit about 3 liters so far, about 4:30 here in California. You know, and I feel
well,
pretty good.
You're up to 3 liters?
Yeah.
Wow, man, you're true. Because the last time every once in a while I'll still go to 3 liters. But I remember in Argentina, I was drinking, 3-4 liters. But nowadays, I say I drink about 2 liters of mate a day. 2 liters, I would say.
Yeah, it helps.
But
it helps, you know, because I'm at home today, so it's a lot easier to drink a lot more when I'm out at work. You know, makes it a lot harder to drink large quantities like that.
Right. And that's what I love about the gourd. It's so versatile that, you know, another question that I get is, can you just sit the gourd down? Will the mate go bad? Could I keep it overnight? Now, there was a time when I told people that you shouldn't keep mate in your gourd overnight, but the truth is that I do it all the time. Now, you may say, well, why would you tell people to do something that you do, not to do something that you do all the time? Well, the thing is this, because when I tell people that it's okay to keep the mate in the gourd overnight, I find that a lot of them take that too seriously and they begin to keep the mate in the gourd for like a day or two or 3 days.
Uh-huh.
In some cases. In my opinion, that's probably not that healthy. I don't think you should do that. But every single night, I do leave yerba mate in my gourd. It's usually semi-fresh, and I feel okay about it. And then in the morning, I wake up and I still have a mate that still has some life to it. And then, you know, I drink that mate gourd for about an hour or two. Then I create a fresh gourd. That's kind of my situation. I feel good about it. Works for me. I don't worry about the mate sitting in the gourd overnight. As long as that I've cleared the whole cycle and I down to the slurp and I know that there's not a lot of excess water, for me, that's totally fine. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, with Brazilian, with the chimarrão, depending on if you're in a really kind of humid place, if it's too hot, if you let the gourd sit too long, you'll notice kind of at the edge of where the dry herb meets the wet herb, it'll kind of start to turn black. I guess this is oxidation, I'm not really sure. But it does kind of start to turn a funky flavor. But, you know, I have, when I lived in Brazil, you know, I would do that sometimes. I would, you know, set the gourd down. If I made it kind of, you know, later in the afternoon or early in the evening, I would set it down. I would, you know, drink, you know, maybe half a liter of that one the next morning and, you know, call it good. I don't do it regularly, mostly because, you know, I enjoy the kind of morning ritual of making a fresh gourd.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as long as, you know, your herb isn't molding overnight, which I've definitely had happen as well, but that's probably because I was in, you know, hot, muggy Brazil with the windows open. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it, you know, on principle like that.
Right. So, yeah, listeners, basically, like Steven said, it's like, it's up to you, but just do your own due diligence. If you feel okay with it, you could leave the mate overnight in the gourd. But a general rule is, and I usually just tell people, don't leave it in your gourd overnight. Just, you know, that's a general rule, which is not very hard to adhere to, because think about it. You wake up in the morning. Most people start drinking mate in the morning, and I would say a lot of materos a lot of new materos at least, don't drink mate throughout the entire day. A lot of them stop drinking it, you know, several hours before sleep. They just dump out their mate, and then that's it. They go to bed, and then they wake up the next morning and prepare a fresh cycle, a whole new preparation of mate. That's the general rule. I do that a lot too, so... but throughout the day, if you make mate in the morning and you go several hours without drinking it, I think it's totally acceptable just to leave that mate where it is. Some people put it in the fridge. When I say mate, this is a good topic actually too. This word mate has multiple meanings. The word mate means the gourd itself. It also means the herb. People refer to this herb as mate as well. And it also means the entire unit, like let's have some mates, like the experience. So when I use
Spanish,
the word mate, what was that?
I said that's only the case in Spanish, but yeah.
Yeah, that's only the case in Spanish, guys. That's only the case in Spanish. They use mate for various terminologies, the herb, the gourd, and the whole unit. Here in the States, the way that I kind of teach my friends and teach a lot of people about mate, I just develop a vocabulary by saying, let's have some mates, which means let's drink some mate. Or do you have any mate, which means do you have the physical herb? Or I say, do you have your mate gourd? And the mate gourd, obviously, is this vessel right here. So that's one thing to keep in mind, this term mate, that's what it means. It has kind of nuances of meanings. Yeah, folks. I mean, I don't know what else to say about a traditional herbal mate circle. There's a lot of super details that we could get into, but I think that's for another video. There's tons of different techniques, as you heard Stephen mention before. You know, there's a technique called hemisphere switching, where you actually take out the bombisha and you put it on the other side of the gourd, and you move, you create a new wort hole, and that kind of uses mate that hasn't been soaked in water. And then there's other techniques where you flood the whole entire gourd by indiscriminately adding water to the mate gourd, where you just capture all the flavor from the mate. There's a lot of techniques, which we'll get into over the next several weeks as we have more circles. But this was basically like an introduction to drinking yerba mate the traditional way. I love it. I can't say anything bad about drinking it the traditional way. I do it every day. I hope you guys continue to learn about mate and drink it the traditional way. Thank you for listening. Do you have any parting words, Stephen?
Well, just keep doing what you're doing, man. Spreading the good word about the good herb.
Thank you. You too, man. Keep on talking about it, too. I know that, you know, you're becoming a big player in the yerba mate world. I see you continuing to educate people. I love what you're doing. Now you're kind of focusing on Brazilian mate. That's great. That's something that I never really focused on. So if for me, seeing you really share the Brazilian yerba mate bombas or bombichas and the different gourds or what they call the cuias, that's really refreshing for me to see that. I'm learning a lot. So keep on doing what you're doing as well.
Thanks, brother.
Thank you so much. And thanks, everybody, for coming on to the show. I hope you continue to come back on too, Stephen, and continue to educate people. And let's just keep on doing this, guys. Usually 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time every Tuesday. We're going to try to have an online mate circle. Who knows what the discussion will be next week? I don't know. Maybe if you have recommendations, shoot us an email or go on to facebook.com and find one of the Circle of Drink groups. There's a couple. Just type in Circle of Drink, and I'm sure you'll find one of them. And just share yourself with us, and we'll continue to share ourselves with you and drinking yerba mate. Salute to that. Thank you guys for another great yerba mate circle. I'm Dave Mate, and this is Stephen. However you want to present yourself.
Stephen's fine for right now.
Okay, Stephen. And thanks a lot, guys. I'll see you next time. Thanks a lot, Stephen, for coming on to the show. And,
no problem.
Have a great
night,
everyone. Salud.
Salud.
Salud. Thank you.